Blog Talk Radio.
Son of a bitch! What's up, guys? That's a throwback. I think, that may or may not be the original Secular Talk opening. Although I'm not sure. I've probably shuffled between, like, four songs, maybe the Headstrong song. That might have been the first one. Whatever. Don't know why I'm talking about this. Obviously, it goes without saying. Actually, it doesn't go without saying. I need to say it. I'll be doing a debate breakdown for the entire show today. It always works out that, like, I don't want to do a full debate breakdown where literally every single story is on the debate and we go through clips and stuff and we talk about it. Like, I always plan that I have like six, seven, maybe eight max clips from debates after a debate. But today, I don't know, it just kept piling up again, man. It happened with the Democratic debate. It happened again now with the Republican debate. So you got to do what you got to do. I don't know, like, shows you how somewhat out of touch I am. Like, I don't know if that's what the audience likes or what they don't like, and they would prefer other stories mixed in. But either way, I got to do it. I'm one of probably two people, three people, and I know because only one other person tweeted me, that actually watched the debate twice since it happened. Yes, I tortured myself because I had to collect all the material and stuff. So I think it's me and just that one person who tweeted me who actually watched it twice, which is fucking unbelievable. I don't know. I don't even know how I do it. Never mind why that other person did it. That other person must really be crazy, because I kind of have to do it. They don't. All right, so I guess no need for any spoilers here. No need for any more information. We're just going to jump right into it, and I'll give you my overall breakdown, and then we'll get into specifics from all the different candidates. So let's start here with the general breakdown. So let's break down the third GOP debate of the 2016 election. This one was, of course, hosted by CNBC. Now, this, I think, is the first time that my takeaway from the debate was radically different from what the polling suggests and what the Republican base suggests and what they say they like. Now, as I always say when I talk about a debate after the fact, I did my best to attempt to view the debate through the eyes of just your run-of-the-mill Republican primary voter. So not necessarily through the lens of the most extreme Tea Party people, certainly not through my eyes 100%, even though I'm sure my own bias kind of feeds into this in one way or another. But I tried my best to view it through the lens of just your average run-of-the-mill Republican voter here. And it was probably the weirdest debate yet in terms of what my takeaway is from it and who did well and who didn't do well, in my view. So, out of fucking left field, the person who I had legit winning the debate, Mike Huckabee. Super, super random. Now, Mike Huckabee, when he ran for president one of the other times, actually kind of hung in there until the end. I think it was when John McCain got through the primary in 2008. It was down to McCain, Romney, and Huckabee. And Huckabee was doing all right. He was hanging in there. Now, since then, he's gotten less popular, I guess you can say, and he's not doing nearly as well as he did back then. But in terms of strictly going off of his performance last night, I actually think he won the debate. Now, the second person who came in second here is also super left field, Chris Christie. Now, I told you guys that Chris Christie is one of those characters who he's good enough with how he presents himself that he can take his bullshit and massage it enough to make people buy what he's selling. He's got this straight shooter, Northeastern Republican vibe going, And I think that that's something that people, if they listen to him talk enough and compare him to the other weak-ass candidates, that they'll actually like him, regardless of the fact that, you know, he was basically hated by the Republican base after the last election because he dared to hug Obama or shake Obama's hand during Hurricane Sandy because he's an adult. So the base didn't like him from the get-go, but in terms of his performance, strictly going off of his performance in the debate, I actually think he came in second. Now, also I should mention, I'm not necessarily going off of substance here. Now, Mike Huckabee randomly defended Medicare and Social Security, which is something that even the Republican base likes, and I agree with him on the substance there. He also advocated for doing this war on disease, basically, where we try to we invest a lot of government money to cure cancer and Alzheimer's and heart disease and this stuff. Another thing where on substance I actually agree with him. But me saying he won, I'm trying my best to divorce that from his performance because I think his performance on its own merits was good regardless of substance. And the same with Christie, who argued the opposite for Social Security. He wants to cut everything in sight and basically privatize it and raise the retirement age and stuff. But again, divorcing the substance from his performance, I think his performance was solid, which is why I have him at number two. Then I have, of course, Trump at number three. And to be clear here, he has such a gigantic lead already that him coming in third is basically, it's totally fine. And again, this is just my opinion and my take on the debate. We'll get to what the non-scientific polls say, the ones that happen directly after, in a second. So I had Trump in third. I had Rubio in fourth, even though he seems like an awkward, sleazy politician. Somehow he's getting a lot of positive press because he's backed by a lot of big money donors, as we've spoken about before. I have Fiorina in fifth. I must admit, she kind of got under my nerves, kind of got on my nerves as I was watching it, but her performance overall was fairly solid. Somebody pointed out to me on Twitter, she never stops fucking blinking. Like, every time she talks, number one, it's super condescending the way she talks about any topic. And then number two, it's just nonstop blink, 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 blink. And even putting that aside, and those are things that I find it hard to put aside, her performance was solid. Carson I have at six. I got nothing to say except he's a silly person. He's human Xanax, as I tweeted yesterday. So boring, but somehow he's hanging in there. Kasich at seven, he also kind of annoyed me the way he was talking. Divorced from substance, because he is more reasonable than most of those people on stage. But just the way he was talking, it came across weird and a little out of character. I had Cruz at number eight. He was his normal, smarmy, smug-ass self, making no sense and just doing standard far-right talking points. Rand Paul at nine, again, a poor performance in my opinion. He didn't get to speak very much, and when he did, he didn't really directly answer the questions. A lot of the other people didn't directly answer the questions either, but nothing really stood out about him. He kept saying, oh, I'm gonna filibuster tomorrow this budget deal because the debt and the deficit sucks. Okay, dude, come on. I mean, he's still not – it doesn't look like he's comfortable yet in his own skin, and he doesn't look like he even believes in himself over the other candidates. He's just coming across weird. He hasn't really found his footing in this race, in my opinion. And then dead last, I have Bush. Oh, my God, it was embarrassing. In all seriousness, he has now morphed into George W. Bush, and if anything, he's even worse than George W. Bush. Like, George W. Bush couldn't put together a coherent sentence back when he was a campaigner, but at least he smiled and he made people like him. This guy, I mean, he puts together sentences that are kind of like what George W. Bush did, and he's not even likable. It's just awkward and weird, and there's so many things he said that had me rolling my eyes, and I think the Republican base is over it, even though he was a favorite of the big money donors as well. They're so over it that it's like, it almost doesn't matter how much money you pour into this guy because he's so immensely unlikable. So that was my takeaway. Now, the polls that happened directly after totally disagree with me in every way, shape, and form. The other two Republican debates, it wasn't like that. The other two Republican debates, what I viewed it as, it was more or less in line with what the snap polls showed. This time, it's like we were watching a different debate. So in the CNBC poll, they had Trump 46% crushing the field. Cruz 20%, solid second there, and I had him all the way down at number 8. Rubio 16%, again, they like him even though he comes across like a cheesy politician. Carson 4%, Kasich 4%, Christie 3%, Paul 3%, Fiorina 3%, Huckabee 1%, Bush 1%. So again, this shows you how either I was horribly off in my analysis, or you know, I just couldn't tap into that frequency that the Republican voters are on, because I really thought Huckabee performed solidly, and this has him tied for last. All right, for Slate, they have Trump at 47%, another crushing victory, Rubio 19%, Cruz 8%, Kasich 8%, Rand 6%, Christie 4%, Carson 4%, Fiorina 3%, Bush 2%, Huckabee 1%. Huckabee last, when again I had him number one. Drudge has Trump 51%, good googly moogly. Cruz 23%, Rubio 11%. So you should sense a pattern here. You have Trump, Cruz, and Rubio consistently in the top three. They have Paul at 4%, Carson at 4%, Fiorina at 2%, Christie at 2%, Kasich at 1%, Huckabee 1%, Bush 1%. And finally, the Time poll, they have Trump at 45%. Again, a crushing victory. This guy's just dropping elbows all over the place. Rubio 20%, Cruz 8%, Paul 8%. Paul, according to the polls, did significantly better than the other debates. Carson 6%, Kasich 5%, Christie 3%, Fiorina 2%, Huckabee 1%, Bush 1%. So, yeah, my takeaway and my breakdown was significantly different from the polls here, but the most important thing to take away is, even though these are non-scientific polls, it's kind of similar to the Bernie situation, which we talked about after the Democratic debate. The scientific polls that are coming out after the fact are also kind of backing up what the poll said, the Snap poll said, which is that Trump is winning no matter how you slice it or dice it. Now, he might be winning with 47% and stuff like that, according to the non-scientific polls. With the scientific polls, he still got like 23%, 24%. There was an NBC News SurveyMonkey poll done after the last debate, and that was the takeaway. So he's winning across the board here. His numbers may be slipping in specific polls in specific places in Iowa or New Hampshire and places like that, but that doesn't mean much because, as we've spoken about before, in Iowa, for example, fucking Rick Santorum won the Iowa caucus the last time around, and then he ended up shitting the bed and not getting anywhere near actually getting the nomination. And this time it could be Carson who takes that place, where Carson is, you know, he's a super religious weirdo who has no chance really to get through the primary, but he could win something like Iowa. And who knows? I don't know. That's the crazy thing is I don't know what's going to happen, because Trump has such a tremendous lead that it's almost like originally the unthinkable is now becoming what's likely, which is that all of us laughed at Trump and said, oh, I got no chance. I mean, look at this buffoon with a ferret on his head. But now it's like it's such a dominating victory that, fuck, you know, of course it can happen. So the people who you really need to look out for, obviously Trump. Rubio is now looking like the establishment guy, where all the big money is going to push behind Rubio because he's their puppet, he's their bitch. So they're going to go behind him. And then also, Cruz has a shot now, but the establishment really doesn't like him because he's that fucking crazy and he's unpredictable. Kind of like Trump, except Trump is better than Cruz. And then also, I think Jeb now is in Scott Walker territory. He might be donezo soon. I thought originally he was going to hang in there maybe till the end. Now it looks like he's in Walker territory. But Kasich and Fiorina still a little bit, they might get some establishment support now, and they might, some big money people might go all in behind them to try to prevent the Trump monster from winning. But it looks like Trump and Rubio are the ones who, in terms of, are viable candidates in terms of they have a pretty good shot at this point. So that's the overall debate breakdown. We're going to have to see what happens from here. But goddamn, it's getting interesting. All right, now, speaking of Trump and Rubio, let's kick it off. Let's kick off our actual clips here with them. So Trump is going to drop a truth bomb about super PACs and money in politics during this debate, and look at how Marco Rubio responds. This is very telling.
I will tell you, you better get rid of the super PACs because they're causing a big problem with this country. Not only in dishonesty and what's going on, but also in a lot of bad decisions that are being made for the benefit of lobbyists and special interests.
You know, Mr. Trump, if I may just a minute, you had talked a little bit about Marco Rubio. I think you called him Mark Zuckerberg's personal senator because he was in favor of the H-1B.
I never said that.
So this was an erroneous article the whole way around?
You've got another gentleman in Florida who happens to be a very nice guy, but not...
My apologies. I'm sorry.
Everybody's really doing some bad facts.
I've been mentioned. Can I respond?
Yes, you may.
So the Democrats have the ultimate super PAC. They're called the mainstream media. So every single day... And I'll tell you why. Last week, Hillary Clinton went before a committee. She admitted she had sent emails to her family saying, hey, this attack in Benghazi was caused by al-Qaeda-like elements. She spent over a week telling the families of those victims and the American people that it was because of a video. And yet the mainstream media is going around saying it was the greatest week in Hillary Clinton's campaign. It was the week she got exposed as a liar. It was the week that she got exposed as a liar. But she has her super PAC helping her out, the American mainstream media.
Don't look at super PACs. Don't care about super PACs because Benghazi. Benghazi. He's become a self-parody. He's so clearly a puppet of the rich. Now, again, as we discussed before, when Scott Walker dropped out and now that Jeb Bush is on the ropes, it's Marco Rubio who's the beneficiary of all that. So you have a lot of big money pouring into his campaign. You have Sheldon Adelson is backing Marco Rubio. That's his bitch. So when Trump says something that's actually true about money in politics, when he talks about super PACs and how the lobbyists control everything, what did Marco Rubio have to do? Oh, he had to pivot away. Don't look at that. Don't talk about that. That's actually right. We can't talk about corruption because my entire campaign is run on corruption. You think a guy like Marco Rubio can win on his ideas? You think he could win appealing to the American people and actually focusing on substance? No, he's an empty fucking suit. So he loves the system of big money controlling people like him because that's the only way he has a chance at victory. So when Trump says something like the super PACs are the problem, money in politics is the problem, he's like, no, deflect, deflect, Hillary Clinton, Benghazi, something, al-Qaeda, whatever. Oh, it's so sad. It's so sad, and also, let me just be clear here for the record. We covered the story recently. It's actually not the case that Donald Trump is 100% self-financed. So it is true he is taking some big money. I don't doubt that it's not nearly as much as the other candidates, and I don't doubt that he's, like, less bought than the other guys, also simply because he's a little off his rocker, so he's hard to control. But that's just for clarity's sake, we should acknowledge that it's actually not the case that, you know, he's super independent and not taking big money. I would say Bernie Sanders is much more independent and not taking big money. But at least Donald Trump is saying the right thing there. And also, another side note, when the moderator saying, hey, Mr. Trump, didn't you say this thing here about Marco Rubio? And Trump's like, no, you have some bad facts. No. No, he did say that. In fact, they come back from one of the breaks, and they're like, oh, I found the source, Mr. Trump. It's from your website. He's like, oh. Anyway, and then he moves on to another topic. But still, on the core issue there, Trump is right to say the super PACs are the problem, the lobbyists are the problem, money in politics is the problem. And Marco Rubio is so substanceless that he has to go, oh, no, no, I love that, so let me just deflect and say, Hillary bad because Benghazi, mainstream media, her super PAC. Look at this nonsense about liberal media. Even conservatives acknowledged that the 897th Benghazi hearings where she had to testify, Hillary wiped the fucking floor with them. It's not a liberal bias to point it out. It's just true to point it out. And he keeps trying to resurrect this issue. You know, it actually is the case that it happened because of the video that was online that pissed off a lot of people. And I don't understand, like, what are you getting at? What do you think, Hillary Clinton wanted the people at Benghazi to die? Is that what you're saying, or are you just saying, oh, my God, it was a failure of leadership for reasons X, Y, and Z? Whatever your claim is, it turns out that nobody's fucking buying it, and you're just doing a pathetic deflection attempt to get away from the most important issue, which Donald Trump, of all people, is bringing up, which is money in politics. All right, now, Let me do one more Trumposaurus here. Donald Trump's closing statement at the CNBC debate was textbook Donald Trump. So let's watch, and then I'll break it down.
Our country doesn't win anymore. We used to win. We don't win anymore. We lose on trade. We lose with ISIS. We lose with one of the worst deals I've ever seen negotiated of any kind. That's our recent catastrophe with Iran. We don't win. Let me give you one quick example. These folks, CNBC, they had it down at three and a half hours. I just read today in the New York Times, $250,000 for a 30-second ad. I went out and said, it's ridiculous. Nobody, I could stand up here all night. Nobody wants to watch 3.5 or 3 hours. It was a big sacrifice, and I have to hand it to Ben. We called Ben. He was with me 100%. We called in. We said, that's it. We're not doing it. They lost a lot of money. Everybody said it couldn't be done. Everybody said it was going to be 3 hours, 3.5, including them. And in about 2 minutes, I renegotiated it down to 2 hours so we can get the hell out of here. Not bad. And I'll do that with the country. We will make America great again. And thank you, everybody.
Just for the record, the debate was always going to be 2 hours.
Senator Rubio,
that's not right.
Absolutely not right. You know that is not right.
Senator Rubio, thank you.
Believe it or not, Trump is correct there. I saw the articles myself. It is the case that it was supposed to be like 3 hours or 3.5 hours, and he did negotiate it down. I mean, if you want to use that as a reason to vote for him to run the country, that's a different conversation. But he's right, and the moderator is wrong there. No, I enjoyed that so much because this is classic Trumposaurus Rex. You know, all vague, general, and enough so that Republican voters are like, yes, more of that. Remember, we covered the article recently that he speaks at a fourth grade level. They have ways of calculating that. They have this device where you can calculate that. And I totally saw it there. You know, there are times where – and I don't – like a lot of people have a really harsh view of that, a negative view of that. I don't even have that. I think the concepts you're talking about can be complex and nuanced and intellectual, but you can still boil it down in simple terms so you effectively you're speaking at a fourth grade level. That's not what he does, but I'm just saying that it's – you can – speak at a so-called fourth-grade level, but be discussing really important concepts and interesting concepts and nuanced concepts. But I saw it there. The way he was, our country doesn't win. Make America great again. I will make us win. You know, we're losing in negotiations with trade deals, with ISIS, with this, with that. It's stuff where you can just totally see people at home who are Republican-based voters, it all gets in their head. You know, there's a connection there. I've spoken about this before, you know, myself, how there are some people who can argue a concept, and it just pierces better into your brain than other people when they argue the same concept. So a guy like Bill Maher, I think, is a fantastic communicator because of how unapologetic he is and direct he is, and sometimes he does speak in simple terms. Where you could have somebody else who's an MSNBC host like Chris Hayes who makes the exact same argument, but just the way he talks and how he frames it and the words he uses, it just doesn't sink in as much. There's not enough of a click. You know, Maher does that. A guy like Donald Trump, you sense he totally does that for the Republican-based voter where they just get it, and they're like, yes, I like that. And then, the most hilarious part is he's really using the fact that he changed the debate terms as like a victory. I won. I got exactly what I wanted. I won. And the scary thing is that'll probably work. I think a lot of people watched that, and they were like, he did get that. He said he won't, that he got it. Make America great again, man. Vote for Trump. I think this is as far as a lot of people are thinking. I'm telling you, Donald Trump is, to people who are liberals, who really care about wonkiness and the issues themselves and the substance, when we hear Donald Trump talk, there's a lot of, like, anger. And, like, this is a fucking joke. I can't believe he's gotten this far. This is absurd. As much as liberals feel that, I feel like conservatives think the exact opposite. Like I said, they listen and they're like, I get it. Him, leader, strong man. There's that authoritarian streak that a lot of the people on the right have where they love that. They want to embrace that shit. I mean, they praised Putin when he fucking jacked Crimea. He just took it. Mine. They're like, oh, strong man, it's great. If they like Putin for that, I mean, Donald Trump, who seems to be a much stronger, louder leader, who speaks in simple sound bites, they're just going to fucking come all over themselves when they hear it. So there you have it, man. That's his closing statement, and this is Donald Trump 101. Liberals hate it. I think conservatives love it. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we got Carly Fiorina, we got Chris Christie, and we got some Mike Huckabee and Ted Cruz. Probably the Ted Cruz one is my favorite segment that we'll do today. I can't wait to give it. He gets shut down in an epic way. He tries to grandstand and demagogue, and he just gets owned. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Thank you. All right, son of a bitch. Let's get to Carly Fiorina here, who had a very weird debate performance, as I was describing in the intro. Carly Fiorina made some hilarious claims about Obama and Hillary. Let's watch.
Becky, it is the height of hypocrisy for Mrs. Clinton to talk about being the first woman president when every single policy she espouses and every single policy of President Obama has been demonstrably bad for women. 92% of the jobs lost during Barack Obama's first term belonged to women. Senator Cruz is precisely right. 3 million women have fallen into poverty under this administration. The number of women living in extreme poverty is the highest level on record. I am a conservative because I know our values, our principles, and our policies work better to lift everyone up, men and women.
Thank you, Mrs. Fiorina.
Now, that actually was an example of the moderators doing a really shitty job. But believe it or not, for a lot of the debate, they did ask follow-up questions, and they did ask some really difficult questions. So I don't grade them too poorly, even though this was a horrible example. But also the format and the layout and how they did this debate was atrocious, because they gave people like a minute to respond to questions. I mean, we're talking about how to run the country here, and we're attempting to maybe talk about policy substance. Not everything is a soundbite, dude. So there was a lot of that, like a lot of people interjecting and shit, and then the moderator would have to be like, all right, no, moving on, and they just keep trying to get off, because Carly wasn't asked a question there, and she just jumped in, and she just went. And with the time limitations, you couldn't really do that. Like, they would have had to stayed very strict within the guidelines. They would have had to been very rigid within the guidelines in order to make it run smoothly. And they didn't do that. But putting that aside, because that's a random side note, everything she said there was false. Unsurprisingly. I mean, and this is what's really scary and weird about Carly Fiorina, is that everybody on stage has said things that are inaccurate, oftentimes. I mean, they are Republicans. But she said every single policy Hillary and Obama espouse have been, quote, demonstrably bad for women. No, but see, the kind of person it takes to say something that bold and that absolutist with no evidence to back it up, that's a questionable person. Like, there's got to be a disconnect. There's got to be this thing where she just doesn't care in any way, shape, or form about the facts, about truth. Because she did this also, and this is why we're discussing it, because this isn't the first time. She did this also with the Planned Parenthood point in the last debate, where she just said shit that didn't happen. She's like, and have you seen the video where they sell baby parts and they show the baby parts and they talk about how they're baby parts? She said something way over the top and way too far, and it just wasn't true. And fact checkers were like, whoa, what the fuck? We've seen things that aren't true before, but goddamn, this is nowhere near true. It seems just wholly made up. Well, it's the same thing going on here. Every single policy that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama have espoused, I mean, they've advocated, for example, just to give one example, for paid maternity leave. That's obviously something that's good for women. Whether or not you agree with it is a separate conversation. But that's obviously something that's good for women that women will tell you when you poll them. Yeah, no, I would like that. That's fantastic. Hillary Clinton, again, whether or not you think this is a big problem and whether or not you agree on the details of it, she has advocated for repeatedly pay equity. These are people who are in favor of the Violence Against Women Act, which, of course, has many different provisions that are fantastic for women. There's a domestic abuse hotline, among many other things. It has protections for women who are in those circumstances. To say that every single policy Hillary and Obama espouse is bad for women, that's nowhere near correct. That's insanely off base. Whether or not you even agree with the policies she proposes, that's off base. And
when she says 92% of jobs lost in Obama's first term belong to women, 92%, I said it. Yeah, I said it. Except this is a claim that's been fact-checked and debunked repeatedly. I on my Twitter feed, I follow a lot of different news outlets because of what I do, and I'm just interested in it. And as soon as she said that, multiple different outlets tweeted out, incorrect, here's the fact check. And you click, you go through the link, and you read everything. No, but that's what's so mind-boggling about Carly Fiorina and people who do stuff like this. It's not about the truth. It's not about facts. It's not about information. It's not about data. She has a goal in mind. I must win. I will defeat the other by any means necessary. So if you got to, smear, smudge the facts, say things that are absurdly absolutist, like every single policy Hillary and Obama espouse have been demonstrably bad for women, fuck it. It is what it is, and I'm going to do it. Well, you'll forgive us if we don't vote for you, because this isn't, this shows that you lack integrity, and it shows that you're not interested in truth, and it shows that your real motivation for running for president is not about what it should be about, which is policy substance, caring about the American people, moving the country forward. There's obviously other things going on here which lead you to act in a way that's totally unacceptable. All right, now, Chris Christie. Chris Christie went on an adorable rant about how the GOP is the party of ideas.
Dr. Carson's right that we can replace Medicare with individual savings account. No, what I said was that I think that Dr. Carson's ideas are good ideas. They're not my ideas, and I don't necessarily agree with all of them, but this is what you're seeing in the Republican debate that you didn't see in that Democrat debate. You didn't see it for a minute. You didn't see these kind of ideas being batted around, and being batted around in a way that's civil and smart and that's trying to help to inform the voter out there. What you saw was a parade of, I'll give you this for free, I'll give you that for free. Let me tell you, everybody, when they say they want to give it to you for free, keep your hand on your wallet, because they're coming to you to pay for it. And that's why I think these ideas up here are great, and that's what we should have, to have more discussions like this and less gotcha.
All right, there's so much irony in that. Chris Christie spent half the night telling the American people, I'm going to cut your Social Security, I'm going to cut your Medicare, I'm going to cut your Medicaid, I'm going to slash entitlements across the board. And then he has the nerve to say, look out when the Democrats talk, you better watch your wallet. No! By your own words, people should look out for you. They should watch their wallet because of you. I mean, when it comes to Medicare and Social Security, these are people, as Mike Huckabee even pointed out, who have paid into this system their entire life, and under a Chris Christie administration, you will rob them. You will take that money and say, I'm not giving it to you. It's not for you. We're making changes. So you're the problem. You're the person that, that makes it so that people should watch their wallet. And then what's hilarious is even this idea that, oh, the Republicans are the party of tax cuts. No, a lot of the guys on stage, they advocate for different taxes, but one of the main ones that you kept seeing come up time and time again is a flat tax. You can't say you're the party of tax cuts and then advocate for a flat tax. Why? Because a flat tax, whether it's 10%, 12%, 16%, or any other number, it's a net tax increase on the middle class and a tax cut for the rich. So 80 to 90% of the American people would see a tax hike. And those are the people in the middle class. And it's the rich who would see a tax cut, so you're not the party of tax cuts. You're only the party of tax cuts for the top 1% or the top 10%. So yet again, ironically, watch your wallet if Chris Christie wins, not if the Democrats win. And then just this smug dismissal that we've been hearing for decades from the right, where they say, Democrats, they were just arguing about who's going to give away more free stuff. No, no, no. See, Chris, we already pay taxes. So since we pay taxes, it's then just a question of priorities. What do we prioritize ahead of other things? What should we fund that makes the most sense? And where should we cut where it would make the most sense? And guys like Bernie Sanders and even Hillary Clinton, in some respects, they would say, well, why don't we prioritize more along the lines of healthcare and education, and our tax money goes towards stuff like that. It goes towards infrastructure spending, maybe some jobs. And why don't we, you know, put some things on the chopping block and cut back on perhaps corporate welfare and military spending? Now, obviously, Hillary's a little questionable on that aspect of it, but Bernie's a guy who outwardly says, yeah, let's cut the military because it's bloated and it's ridiculous and we spend more than the next 9 biggest countries combined, and why don't we cut corporate welfare? So it's just a matter of priorities. If we're paying taxes, shouldn't we have a say where the money goes? And this idea that it's just smugly dismissed, like, ah, free stuff. It's not free. We're fucking paying for it with our taxes, and we want to pick what the fuck it goes to. With these guys, it's either they want you to pay taxes and shut the fuck up, it's going to go to corporate welfare, it's going to go to war, or they want you to just pay the government to appease the government. Like, here, take my money, and no, don't give me anything, just leave me alone. Well, that's how a mafia acts, literally. Take my money and just don't fucking hurt me. Is that what you want, Chris Christie? Is that how you want the government to function? And he says, well, the Republicans, we're the party of ideas, we're having smart discussions. My ass cheeks, son. I saw the whole debate, I saw the entire Democratic debate. The conversation you were just having, which is what led you to say this is so substantive, was about just how much we should cut Medicare and or privatize it. That's not a debate of ideas. That's your fucking answer for everything. Everything is more deregulation, more privatization, less government. Everything. That's your answer. Whereas the Democrats, what do the Democrats say? Depends on the issue. Sometimes it depends on the regulation. Yeah, maybe sometimes we roll back, burdensome regulations and red tape. No problem with that. But maybe other times we do a government solution. And this idea that, government solutions are all a monolith, like they're all the same. No, you can attack a problem with the government, and there could be 1,000 different approaches to attacking that problem by using the government in different ways. And some things are better than other things. And that requires thought and nuance and detail and evidence and learning. But they make it seem they flip the truth on its head. We're having a debate of ideas. The Democrats are not. No, you're the guys who had the same answer for everything. So it's just, this one got under my skin more than anything else because he's so condescending and arrogant in the way he says it, but everything he's saying is just totally untrue. All right, let me do one more here. Actually, I lied. Maybe two more before. Let me do two more before we get to a break. I'm going to stick with Chris Christie here. I got more counterfactual assertions. I like them apples. Chris Christie went on a counterfactual rant here on entitlements. Let's watch.
In your Tell It Like It Is campaign, you've said a lot of tough things. You said that we need to raise the retirement age for Social Security. You think that we need to cut benefits for people who make over $80,000 and eliminate them entirely for seniors who are making over $200,000. Governor Huckabee, who's here on the stage, has said that you and others who think this way are trying to rob seniors of the benefits that they've earned. It raises the question, when is it acceptable to break a social compact?
Well, I wish you would have asked that question years ago when they broke it. I mean, let me be honest with the people who are watching at home. The government has lied to you, and they have stolen from you. They told you that your Social Security money is in a trust fund. All that's in that trust fund is a pile of IOUs for money they spent on something else a long time ago. And they've stolen from you because now they know they cannot pay these benefits because Social Security is going to be insolvent in 7 to 8 years. We're sitting up here talking about all these other things. 71% of federal spending today is on entitlements and debt service, and that's with 0% interest rates. Now, I'm the only person who has put out a detailed plan on how to deal with entitlements, and we'll save $1 trillion over the next 10 years. And here's the difference between me and Hillary Clinton. What Hillary Clinton's going to say, and has said before, is she wants to raise Social Security taxes. Now, let me ask you a question, everybody. And this is for, the guy who owns a landscaping business out there. If somebody's already stolen money from you, are you going to give them more? Or are you going to deal with the problem by saying, I'm going to give people who have done well in this country less benefits on the back end? We need to get realistic about this. We're not. The American people, forget about anything else. They've already been lied to and stolen from. And I'm going to go to Washington to stop it.
He keeps saying that Social Security has already stolen money from you. The government has already stolen money from you through Social Security. And that's not true. They haven't. But if you elect Chris Christie, he's advocating for doing exactly that, which is the irony of this. He's making it seem, I'm a truth teller and I'm a straight shooter and I'm going to be honest with the American people. But you're not being honest, because as of right now, the government hasn't stolen anything from anybody. But if we actually implement the cuts and benefits that you want to do and raise the retirement age, well, then that is going to be robbing people, because they paid into the system expecting something back, and you want to change the terms of that and say, no, I'm going to give you less back. Well, that means you're robbing them. Nobody's robbing them right now. Incredible. It's incredible. And I do think, you know, substance aside, because he's dead wrong on the substance, I do think the way he framed that stuff, it might, you know, make some, especially Republican establishment people, like the way he's talking, because the Republican establishment has been coming for Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security for a long time now. And also, just to dive deeper into the substance here, he said, quote, Social Security will be insolvent in 7 to 8 years. Totally false. Let me give you the specifics on that. Here's the reality. Quote, Social Security is currently projected to be fully solvent until the year 2037. All right, now let me pause here to say, this is usually where people chime in and say, well, in 2037, the program defunct, goes bankrupt. 2037, it's over, insolvent. Wrong. They say after that, it is expected to be able to pay out 75% of its benefits. So that's not bankrupt, defunct, insolvent, fill in the blank with whatever financial term you want to say no good. No, that just means you need minor tweaks in order to fix it. That's it. So when they say, oh my God, it's so horrible, it's so terrible, it's going to go bankrupt, we got to cut benefits to seniors, that's simply not true. And also let me mention that oftentimes when economists go in here to crunch the numbers, whether they're looking at Medicare or Social Security, every time they check, it always is the case that like a few decades out in the future, oh, then there's going to be problems. So for example, if they studied it in like, you know, 1990, they may have said that by today, these programs would be insolvent. But then when they came back to study them today, they say, oh, look, we have another 20-30 years before there's any problems. So every time they study it, you have, you know, this window where it's like, oh, down the road, man, we're going to have a problem. Guys, right now there's a fucking surplus. We have a surplus in these programs. Other programs don't even have a surplus. And Chris Christie's not talking about, oh, my God, we got to cut those programs, cut them, cut them, cut them. There's no money in there. There's no money in there. This one has a surplus right now. He's like, cut it, cut it, cut it, cut it, cut it, cut it, cut it. Because he's wrong on the facts. He's wrong on the numbers, and that should be clear to everybody. And then finally, guys, you have to understand that this is a Trojan horse, because he said raise the retirement age. So, number one, right off the bat, there he's robbing you because he's going to cut your benefits. That's a cut in benefits, effectively. And also what he said is, well, we shouldn't pay out Social Security to rich people. You know, and he draws the line, whatever, 200,000 in some cases and lower in other cases. Understand what happens there. That's when you turn Social Security into an earned benefit program where we all pay in and then we all get out. And if you do what Christie wants, he's turning it into a welfare program, which means everybody pays in, but not everybody gets out. You have to qualify with certain, you know, make a certain amount of money under this condition and that condition. And what happens whenever something's a welfare program? What do the Republicans then do? Then they turn around and say, oh, lazy moocher parasites, got to get rid of the program. It's a welfare program. So you see what's happening here? Trojan horse. They propose making it an earned, changing it from an earned benefit to a welfare program, and then they're going to turn around and say, it's a welfare program. We got to get rid of it. We don't like welfare. This has been their plan all along, man. And finally, to Clinton's solution and to Bernie's solution, he makes it seem like, oh, they want to raise taxes. That's how he framed it. That's totally misleading, because that implies that, you know, they want to raise taxes on your average Joe, like he said, somebody who owns a lawn mowing business or something like that. No, listen to what their proposals actually are. They say, as of right now, you only pay Social Security tax up to like $116,000 or so. So there's a cap on it. Everything you make over $116,000, you're not taxed on it. So what they want to do is just lift the cap. So instead of people, you know, somebody makes $4 million a year and they're only paying Social Security tax on the first $116,000, they want to make it so that they pay the same percentage as the person who makes $80,000. So you have to pay Social Security tax on all your income, on the $4 million you make every year. And if you do that, no problems. Social Security is set as far as the eye can see. So it only makes sense. They're advocating so that Kobe Bryant pays the same rate in Social Security tax as your mom does. Seriously. Whatever your mom makes, if you make $60,000, $80,000, whatever. That's what they're advocating for. That's what the Democrats want. Christie wants to raise the retirement age, so cut your benefits, make it a welfare program, and then eventually either privatize it fully or get rid of it. I think you know who's in the right on this issue. All right, next. I'm not going to do the Ted Cruz one because I need more time for it, but I'll do the Mike Huckabee one, and then when we come back from the break, I'll do the Ted Cruz one. The Ted Cruz one is my favorite. I promise you that. Mike Huckabee came out with an interesting proposal yesterday while discussing the cost of health care. Let's check it out.
Points that Senator Rand Paul was just making when it comes to Social Security. Your time, sir.
Well, and specifically to Medicare, Becky, because 85% of the cost of Medicare is chronic disease. The fact is, if we don't address what's costing so much, we can't throw enough money at this. And it's why I continue to focus on the fact that we need to declare war on the four big cost drivers, because 80% of all medical costs in this country are chronic disease. We don't have a health care crisis in America. We have a health crisis. And until we deal with the health of Americans and do what we did with polio when I was a little kid, we eradicated it. You know how much money we spent on polio last year in America? We didn't spend any. We've saved billions of dollars. You want to fix Medicare? Focus on the diseases that are costing us the trillions of dollars, Alzheimer's, diabetes, heart disease, and cancer. Eradicate those, and you fix Medicare, and you fixed America, its economy, and you've made people's lives a heck of a lot better.
Thank you.
Thank you, Governor.
All right, so understand, guys, when we talk about Mike Huckabee, in many ways he's a very loathsome character. So he's outwardly theocratic, doesn't even bother hiding it. I mean, we cover the story from the last time he ran, where he said, there are people in this race who don't want to replace the Constitution with God's law. So this is a scary dude in many ways. He also worked with scam companies that pretended they had cures to cancer and diabetes and other things. We've covered that in detail on the show recently. That's totally inexcusable. In fact, he's probably be in jail for doing that. But here we have an argument that actually makes sense. Now, I was poking fun at him yesterday on Twitter, saying, oh, he wants to eradicate these diseases. How? With prayer? So I was fucking around, but in all seriousness, he's right. What he's advocating for is a war on disease. He's advocating for, you know, he didn't frame it this way, but it certainly sounds like he's saying blank check for cancer research and research on heart disease and Alzheimer's, I think he said, and some others. Yeah, I mean, that's something that everybody should get on board with. And there's another time in the debate, when he was defending Medicare and Social Security and this idea as well, and he actually said this is a moral issue. I think he said this isn't a math issue, this is a moral issue. Totally true. So I hate Mike Huckabee, let's be clear, for all the other trillion reasons we've discussed on the show before. But in terms of this specific idea and what he's saying, he's 100% right, and the Democrats should run with this platform. Because, you know, we oftentimes, a war on terror. Well, you can't really do that, because you're not going to win. In fact, we've made it worse. War on drugs, same thing, we made it worse. But to actually wage a war on disease and the leading causes of death, funding medical research, oh, that's a war I can get behind, and that's a war that randomly Mike Huckabee is advocating for, and credit to him. All right, break time when we come back. The best clip of the debate, Ted Cruz, and then we got a whole bunch of crazy stuff, including Ben Carson contradicting himself repeatedly, and Jeb Bush making you feel funny. Son of a bitch. What's up, people? Matter of fact, while I have a spare minute here, let me check out the booster campaign. Oh, would you look at that? I'm not kidding. This is actually the first time I'm learning about this. We blew by the second goal. So I told you guys already that for the shirt drive, the original goal was 50. We blew past that in one day. Then I set the goal at 250, and we blew past that. It's 277 right now. 5 days to go. So if you want to get a shirt skis, get on it. We got women's shirts, men's shirts, hoodies. We have Secular Talk dildos and vibrators. We have Secular Talk lubricant. I'm just kidding. We should have that, though. Yeah, great job, man. You guys are great. And half the money's going to Wolfpack, half the money's going to Lilith for all the fantastic work she does for the show. She'll actually be on the show tomorrow. So looking forward to that. And there we have it. All right, let's discuss Ted Cruz. This really is my favorite clip of the day from the debate. Okay, set this up for you. Ted Cruz was epically shut down yesterday at the CNBC debate when he tried to grandstand and demagogue.
Senator Cruz, congressional Republicans, Democrats, and the White House are about to strike a compromise that would raise the debt limit, prevent a government shutdown, and calm financial markets. That fear of another Washington-created crisis is on the way. Does your opposition to it show that you're not the kind of problem solver American voters want?
You know, let me say something at the outset. The questions that have been asked so far in this debate illustrate why the American people don't trust the media. This is not a cage match. And if you look at the questions, Donald Trump, are you a comic book villain? Ben Carson, can you do math? John Kasich, will you insult two people over here? Marco Rubio, why don't you resign? Jeb Bush, why have your numbers fallen? How about talking about the substantive issues people care about?
Ah, the fucking skippers. We got the skipper in Gilligan. Give it a second here.
Democratic debate, where every fawning question from the media was, which of you is more handsome and wise?
So this
and
is
let me
question
take
about why the fuck it keeps skipping, but this is actually pissing me off big time. We can't get a break this week, man. The fucking show yesterday with all the Blog Talk Radio problems. And now today. This is the best clip, too. I'm really pissed.
You have 30 seconds left to answer, should you choose to do so.
Let me be clear. The men and women on this stage have more ideas, more experience, more common sense than every participant in the Democratic debate. That debate reflected a debate between the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks. And nobody watching at home believes that any of the moderators has any intention of voting in a Republican primary. The questions that are being asked shouldn't be trying to get people to tear into each other. It should be, What are your substantive solutions to people who are...
I just want the record to reflect. I asked you about the debt limit, and I got no answer.
Okay. All right, you want me to answer that question? I'm happy to answer that question. I'm happy to answer our question, but let me tell you how the question is. Let me tell you how that question is. Let me tell you how that...
Senator Paul, I've got a question for you.
So you don't actually want to hear the answer, John?
Senator Paul?
You don't want to hear the answer. You just want to hear the insult.
You used your time on something else.
Senator Paul? You're not interested in an answer.
John, I'm interested in an answer from Senator Paul. Senator Paul, the budget deal crafted by Speaker Boehner and passed by the House today.
Oh, that was glorious. I love the way that ended. I love the way that ended. No, okay, guys. He was asked a question about the debt ceiling and the fact that he's basically against negotiation and compromise. And people said, well, look, without raising the debt ceiling, we'll run into problems. Does this mean that you're not the kind of leader that the American people... you know, would want or something like that. Perfectly legitimate question about substance, about the fact that historically you have not negotiated, Ted Cruz, and about the fact that on an issue like the debt ceiling, you must negotiate or the country goes fucking bankrupt. Perfectly legitimate question about the debt ceiling. What does he do? He turns around and lectures the media that they're not asking substantive questions. They just asked you a substantive question. They just asked you one. And you pivoted, why aren't you asking substantive questions instead of this substance about the debt ceiling and whatnot? That's as substantive as it gets, guys. And when he goes down the list and he fucking says, oh, and this question about, can you attack two people, can you do this? He made all that up. That was just a complete straw man. At one point he mentioned, you know, Ben Carson, can you do math? Like brushing it off as if like, why don't you ask him something substantive? That exchange with Ben Carson, which happened earlier, was all about substance because Ben Carson's budget does not add up. It doesn't make sense. It's not possible to implement his budget because there would be a tremendous ballooning of the debt and the deficit. And they're pointing that out, and they're saying, you do know that this, you know, you say you want to balance the budget, but your budget would make it so that the opposite happens. And he's like, no. And so they go through some of the math with him, and they're like, when this happens, it means you got the shortfall of X amount. And Ted Cruz is like, why aren't you focusing on substance? They're talking about fucking budget numbers, man. That's as substantive as it gets. Now, I understand I'm always one to go after the media for not being substantive. But, of course, with Ted Cruz, you know, swinging a miss, he's lecturing them one of the few times where they are focusing on substance. Unbelievable this guy is. And I like how, I think it was Dave Rubin who tweeted yesterday when you had him cough there. Ted Cruz was coughing in the middle of his fucking lecturing the media. He's like, oh, he's literally choking on his own bullshit. Oh, it's so true. It's such a perfect fucking metaphor for what's happening there. No, and let's perfectly clear on the issue of the debt ceiling. The moderator is totally right. Like, the fact that you're not willing to negotiate and compromise, and we have issues like the debt ceiling to worry about, means you could really fuck over this country, man. Like, basically, if you don't raise the debt ceiling, you're saying to everybody else, we are not going to pay our debts, which means the economy grinds to a halt because we can't, take any more money. And our credit rating drops, and world financial markets, you know, teeter on the brink of collapse. No, but see, this is the point. Ted Cruz doesn't know dick about substance, so when somebody asks him a substantive question, he lectures them about not asking substantive questions. And spare me this idea that, oh, the media loves the Democrats and, no, they hate us. No, it's just that when people finally ask you a substantive question, you don't know how to answer, so you lecture them about not asking you substantive questions. It's beyond pathetic. It was so awesome how they just moved past him. No, you had your time. You used it on something else. Next. People need to sun Ted Cruz like that more often. No, we gave you more time than you were allotted. You used it on something else. Moving on. Rand Paul. I love that. I love that with every fiber of my being. All right, Ben Carson. It's going to get weirder, bro. Ben Carson had a really awkward moment discussing gay marriage and homosexuality last night. Let's watch.
I believe that our Constitution protects everybody, regardless of their sexual orientation or any other aspect. I also believe that marriage is between one man and one woman. And there is no reason that you can't be perfectly fair to the gay community. They shouldn't automatically assume that because you believe that marriage is between one man and one woman, that you are a homophobe. And this is one of the myths that the left perpetrates on our society. And this is how they frighten people and get people to shut up. You know, that's what the PC culture is all about, and it's destroying this nation. The fact of the matter is, we, the American people, are not each other's enemies. It's those people who are trying to divide us who are the enemies, and we need to make that very clear to everybody.
Okay, that was precious. I believe that our Constitution protects everybody equally, including people who have different sexual orientations. But I'm opposed to gay marriage. Do you not see how the first part of that contradicts the second part of that? Do you not see how that's not logically possible? And just so everybody understands here, think about it in any other context. I think our Constitution protects everybody equally, but I don't believe in interracial marriage. Just because I don't believe in interracial marriage doesn't mean I'm a racist. Say it with me, guys. Yes, it does. That is exactly what it means. You know, I don't like it when them Negroes marry our people. They should stick to their own kind. Now, that don't mean I'm racist. No, everybody hearing that goes, don't be ridiculous. Of course that's what it means. Of course. At least be honest about it. Ben Carson's trying to have it both ways. I'm against gays having the same rights as straight people. But that doesn't mean I'm against gays. That doesn't mean I'm a homophobe. Yes, it does! Yes, it fucking does! No, we need to get rid of this, you know, contradictory way of thinking that somehow still exists. I mean, people are going to look back. I look at that clip now, and I think it's hilariously stupid. People are going to look 50 years from now, people would look back at this and go, oh my God! Oh my, that's just fucking embarrassing. And again, the classic, now Ben Carson has used this dodge more than anybody else now, the PC culture dodge. No, Ben, you're not getting it. When we call you out, it's not because we're being politically correct, it's because we're being correct, and you are incorrect. That doesn't mean that there isn't a real problem with so-called PC culture, where people go too far in language policing and stuff like that. Of course that exists. We call out on this show all the time. We just did a segment about how colleges, are trying to change the wording for everything to try to make people feel better and not offend anybody. And they go way too far, and it doesn't make any sense, and it's a waste of mind power and intellectual resources. And it's just ridiculous. I call that out. That's real PC culture run amok. And there's other examples, too, and I call it out there, too. But this is not that. This is you being a homophobe, as you say you're not a homophobe. And let's keep that in perspective. Whether it's Ben Carson, Ann Coulter, Donald Trump, or other right-wing hosts who hide behind the PC culture argument, what they're doing is they want to not be called out for saying shit that is wrong. And that's not an effective strategy. Don't back down when they say, oh, PC culture. That's not PC culture. That's we're right, you're wrong, you are a homophobe. At least fucking admit it. Woo! All right, I got three more here. Then it looks like we might finish a wee bit early today, lass. Which is cool. I ain't mad at it. What is it? One more Ben Carson. Fantasy football randomly coming up. Oh, and Jeb Bush. Who knows what that sound is? That's Jeb Bush's campaign. It's the new sound that I've now used like the last however many days in a row to describe Jeb Bush's campaign. I can't wait until the day that one of you ends up using that at like a family event or some shit. You're out at a party, you're talking politics. Yeah, Jeb Bush's campaign, I mean, it's a little bit... You'll be like, what the fuck did you just say? Well, his campaign is... I don't know if that is a campaign or a dying giraffe, but either way, I think it's funny. Ben Carson was called out for some incredibly sleazy personal behavior. Let's watch.
There's a company called Manatech, a maker of nutritional supplements, with which you had a 10-year relationship. They offered claims that they could cure autism, cancer. They paid $7 million to settle a deceptive marketing lawsuit in Texas, and yet your involvement continued. Why?
Well, that's easy to answer. I didn't have an involvement with them. That is total propaganda, and this is what happens in our society, total propaganda. I did a couple of speeches for them. I did speeches for other people. They were paid speeches. It is absolutely absurd to say that I had any kind of a relationship with them. Do I take the product? Yes. I think it's a good product.
To be fair, you were on the homepage of their website with the logo over your shoulder.
If somebody put me on their homepage, they did it without my permission.
Does that not speak to your vetting process or judgment in any way?
No, it speaks to the fact that I don't know those. they know.
One of the best neurosurgeons ever working with a company that has bogus cancer cures. It's hilarious. Except that's not funny. That's nowhere near funny. I think I'm most annoyed at the audience there. That's inexcusable, guys. No, what they're bringing up, this is really important. Those are facts. So here you have a world-renowned neurosurgeon. Whatever you think of anything else about Ben Carson, he's a world-renowned neurosurgeon. And he worked with this company, and this company was pushing fake cures. And Ben Carson went from, I have no affiliation with them, no relationship with them, to, I did paid speeches for them, and he literally just endorsed the product right there. Ben, again, you have trouble with this thing called a contradiction. I don't think you get it. I don't think you understand what a contradiction is. The first thing you said contradicts the second thing you said there. I have no affiliation with them, no relationship with them. I give paid speeches for them. That's an affiliation. That's a relationship. And he says, you're on the website. I didn't know about that. Bullshit, you didn't know about that. Again, this is another example where various press outlets, after this exchange, they had articles that they put right up that showed they have videos of him giving speeches for these people and getting paid for it. They have videos of him crediting him saying himself about one of their products, I think this helps cure cancer. Okay, that's not okay. That's not acceptable. You simply are a scam artist if you do that. It is what it is, man. There's zero evidence to back up those claims. And it's not just Ben Carson either. They didn't ask Huckabee about this. He was probably like, oh, thank God. But Huckabee did this as well. Huckabee worked with companies. He sends out these email blasts, and companies pay him to use his email because a lot of people have Huckabee's, you know, are on Huckabee's mailing list, and they're fucking dolts, and they don't realize they're getting hit with all types of scam products. One of them was like, you need to fucking frankincense and a Bible verse and read it and it'll help cure cancer. Huckabee was sending that out. A company was through his email. There's another one where he did a fucking infomercial saying, a diabetes cure if you eat the right way and this and that. Nonsense, nonsense. So it's not just Ben Carson, it's also Mike Huckabee. And guys, this is inexcusable shit. You know, with the fact that the audience was booing the moderator there, that's not okay. Because what the audience is saying, yeah, I'm giving my seal of approval to this guy who's a world-renowned doctor who endorsed a product that doesn't do what it says it does. That's fraud. That's fraud. And they're booing the fucking moderator for daring to press on this. No, the moderator not only should press on this, everybody should dismiss Ben Carson because he's pushing bogus cancer cures. Why is this not a no-fucking-brainer? But that's because of the Republican Party. They're special. You know how they are. Do facts matter? No. Does evidence matter? No. Does data matter? No. It's a giant cult of personality. Me like that one! I will defend him even if he pushes bogus cancer cure. Well, that says a lot about you and your intelligence. All right, let's go to the fantasy football story. The candidates at the debate last night were asked a question about fantasy football and they had this exchange.
Daily fantasy sports has become a phenomenon in this country. We'll award billions of dollars in prize money this year. But to play, you have to assess your odds, put money at risk, wait for an outcome that's out of your control. Isn't that the definition of gambling, and should the federal government treat it as such?
Well, first of all, I'm 7-0 in my fantasy football league.
I had a feeling you were going to brag about that.
Gronkowski is still going strong. I have Ryan Tannehill, Marco, as my quarterback. He was 18 for 19 last week. So I'm doing great, but we're not gambling. And
oh.
I think this has become something that needs to be looked at in terms of regulation. Effectively, it's day trading without any regulation at all. And when you have insider information, which apparently has been the case, where people use that information, use big data to try to take advantage of it, there has to be some regulation. If they can't regulate themselves, then the NFL needs to look at this, you know, moving away from them a little bit, and there should be some regulation. I have no clue whether the federal government's the proper place. My instinct is to say hell no, just about everything about the federal government.
Wait a second. We have $19 trillion in debt. We have people out of work. We have ISIS and Al-Qaeda attacking us. And we're talking about fantasy football? How about we get the government to do what they're supposed to be doing? Secure our borders, protect our people, and support American values and American families. Enough on fantasy football. Let people play. Who cares?
Sharon, I want to go back.
All right, so there's a bunch of things I love there. The loudest applause of the night that Jeb Bush got was right there when he talks about fantasy football. And he actually lit up more than any other time I've heard him talk about anything while discussing fantasy football. And he also had a Clinton moment there. You know how Clinton, I smoke marijuana, I didn't inhale. Jeb was like, I play fantasy football, but I wasn't gambling. Come on, man. Shut the fuck up. Just stop it. Stop it, stop it, stop it. Everybody already knows you're a fake establishment prick, and you just solidified that further. I mean, for fuck's sake, be a human. I play fantasy football. Nobody's going to care. Nobody's going to fucking care. I was going to say, somebody better investigate him because he's fucking playing fantasy football. What a loser. He's such a loser. But the important aspect of this story here, I know it's hard to find an important aspect. You heard Jeb Bush there and Chris Christie say, basically, who cares? Jeb was saying, we allow it. Maybe we regulate it. Maybe we don't. But, of course, we should allow fantasy football. Christie's like, let it go. Who cares? So if I have this right, that's two of you now arguing for legal gambling. Can I get you to put that in writing? Can I get you to push for those policies? No, I find it amazing how much people compartmentalize about the world. Like if they were to frame that question just by putting it out there, being straightforward. Hey, legal gambling. You guys for it? What would they all say? Oh, morality, and this, especially Marco Rubio, who takes money from Sheldon Adelson. Oh, no, unless every casino was a Sheldon Adelson casino, then fuck no. But online gambling? No. Marco Rubio was on a bill that tried to ban all online gambling because of Sheldon Adelson. He takes money from him, Lindsey Graham as well, who was at the earlier debate. So here they're saying, whatever, fantasy football, this kind of gambling is fine, and the way you worded it, it's fine. But if they were to ask him, you want to legalize them, they would have said no. So they're all such fucking gigantic hypocrites, and they're not principled people. These are not principled people we're talking about. Because it doesn't matter if you ask me today, tomorrow, 2 weeks from now, it doesn't matter how you frame the fucking question to me. If you ask me, Kyle, should we legalize gambling, my answer is always going to be fuck yes. We should legalize it, tax it, and regulate it like anything else. You should be able to do whatever you want with your own money as long as you're not hurting anybody, you know? And these guys, they can't be that straightforward. They can't be that honest. And they have to play this establishment game, which nobody fucking likes. They like it. We don't like it. They like it. But we smell the bullshit now from a mile away, man. Could you guys just fucking lay it out there and be normal people and be humans? Yeah, whatever. Let's try to legalize gambling. But they can't do it because they're all entrenched in the system and they have different special interests pulling them in different directions, and none of them can really keep it real in any other way while discussing the issue of gambling only in the context of fantasy football did they say something that made any sense. All right, next. And the final story of the day. Jeb Bush gave us the creepiest line of the debate while discussing budget issues. Let's watch.
And my record was one of cutting taxes each and every year. You don't have to guess about it because I actually have a record. $19 billion of tax cuts, 1.3 million jobs created. We were one of two states to go to AAA bond rating, and our government spending was far less than the spending in people's income.
But to the point that you made to Congress, if you were president and you were offered a bipartisan deal that had $1 of tax increases for $10,
you find me a Democrat.
Would you take it?
You find me a Democrat that will cut spending $10. Heck, find me a Republican in Congress that would cut spending $10.
So you don't want the coach to put you in anymore?
Look, the deal was already done. The biggest tax increase happened under the watch of Barack Obama, and spending's gone up. You find a Democrat that's for cutting taxes, cutting spending $10, I'll give him a warm kiss.
The internet pounced on this. I mean, this was like a fucking wounded antelope walking through the field with the lion stalking it. The lion is the internet. The antelope is Jeb Bush. They fucking pounced. Warm kiss? I'll give him a big warm kiss. Oh, you're so goofy. Now, I'm telling you guys, he slowly morphed into George W. Bush. And actually, if anything, George W. Bush had his shit way more together. Because George W. Bush, while he's a fucking moron, at least he was able to appear likable. Whereas Jeb Bush just seems incoherent, boring, and creepy. Who says that? I've never heard that before. Warm kiss. And then the mental picture of that, of Jeb Bush, like, kissing anybody. But even to the substance of it, which obviously I feel compelled to discuss here. Where's this fucking idea come from that, like, oh, you know, those Democrats, I don't want to fucking cut anything. Dude, I'll shake on it right now. I'll cut the military budget in half. You want to do it? We'll cut it in half, son. In half. Because guess what? Even if we cut it in half, we have the biggest military in the world by a mile and a half. So cutting it in half is just getting the conversation started here. I'll cut that. I will eliminate. Did you hear me properly? Eliminate corporate welfare. All corporate welfare. Right now. What are you saying? Oh, Democrats, they don't want to cut spending. And he's trying to say Obama raised taxes big time. Nonsense. Nonsense. Obama raised the rate from 36%, the top marginal rate, from 36% to like 39%. And you're going to say, oh, he raised the biggest tax increase in history. Bullshit. Unless you lump in shit that's not even a fucking tax in there, and you disregard all the tax cuts he did for the middle class, for example. He made over 80% of the Bush tax cuts permanent. You're going to bitch that he raised taxes? He did over a dozen small business tax cuts in his first term alone. This classic, you know, Republican talking points 101. Deny reality completely, harp away on the stuff that's not even true. And here you saw it with Jeb Bush, and the little fucking cherry on top was, I have a warm kiss. Oh, you just went from 0% to negative 12% in the polls. All right, that'll do it, baby. That's the show. All right, guys, you're awesome. Come back tomorrow. We'll have an awesome Friday show, whole bunch of great stories, and Lilith will be talking to us as well. That's all I got for you. Keep using our Amazon link. Thanks to everybody who is using the Amazon link and who, you know, liked that video, shared that video and stuff the other day. That was huge. Tremendous. Yeah, that's all I got for you. I'm actually ending a minute and a half early. How do you like them apples? All right, guys. Have a good night. Peace.